Hello and welcome to the Calling Hours podcast brought to you by Homesteaders Life Company. My name is Danielle Burmeister. I'm the Vice President of Marketing and Communications at Homesteaders, and I'm so grateful you're here and so excited to bring you our very first episode. We could not think of a better person to kick things off than Homesteaders President, CEO, and Board Chair Steve Schaefer. Steve has been in the business for a long time. He is a force of nature and a source of so much wisdom and experience in the funeral space. And we are really excited to bring you a very detailed and comprehensive conversation with him. We get into so many things. We talk about Steve's experience, you know, his early days in the funeral profession all the way up through where he is now, his highs and lows in his time at Homesteaders, the trends and the changes that he has seen in the funeral profession in that time, his tips for having productive mentoring relationships. We even touch on hockey and Gold Peak iced tea. There is a lot in this conversation. It is one that is well worth your time, and we're so excited to be able to share it with you. So without further ado, I give you Steve Schaefer.
Steve, you are the very first guest on our Homesteaders podcast, so welcome. We're very excited to have you. I wanted to start by talking to you a little bit about your history. You've been in the business for a very, very long time, dating back, I won't say how many years.
So you're calling me old, is that it?
Seasoned is the term that I think is more acceptable.
Seasoned and matured?
Yes. Yeah. At least that's what my parents tell me when I talk to them. I wanted to ask you, what attracted you to funeral service?
I started my career in public accounting, so I was an accountant. I was fortunate to work with several funeral companies and also with several healthcare companies. And as I was thinking about making a career change early on, one thing that was really important that served me well over my career is that I wanted to do something that helped people in a real way on the front lines. And so I found that I could have both an exciting career in funeral service, helping companies grow through acquisition, and a rewarding experience in that I'd be working in something that helps people every day so immensely in some of the worst times of their life. I chose funeral service, and I've never looked back and regretted that decision at all. It's been a wonderful career path for me.
What did that leap look like for you, going from kind of straight accounting over into funeral service? What was that first role? How did you make those connections?
Yeah, it was interesting. So when you work in public accounting, a lot of times when you make a career change, you end up working with a client that you already have, and that's what happened for me. I had a client, Prime Succession, which was started by Tom Johnson and a few of his partners back in the early, would have been the early 90s. And I went to work for them. And it was primarily in a financial role, but in a planning, building, infrastructure building type role inside the company. And so not purely debits and credits, but really in helping the company get prepared for the immense growth that they were experiencing at the time. And it was a great experience for me because it was a company that already existed. I knew them well because I was their auditor, but I also didn't know the nuts and bolts of everything that they were doing and had to accomplish. And I really got baptized by fire into the funeral profession. They had a number of locations across the country, a number of cemeteries. So I got exposed to lots of aspects of the business. And one of the key aspects I was exposed to early was pre-need. And I thought, what a great model for helping people plan in advance, take care of something before they have a death that occurs and really helps them be prepared for that eventual day when they do pass.
What are some of the first lessons you learned in funeral service?
One lesson I learned was that it's not like many other businesses. And there's a lot of people in different businesses that say that, like, our business is different. But in funeral service, the people who are in the business are really committed and passionate to serving their communities and their families. And that impressed me. And I was lucky to work with a group that really valued that aspect of the funeral profession and tried to make sure that on a local level, the employees, the professionals were able to still take care of their families regardless of what else was happening, you know, alongside the company. And choosing that as a next career step for me was something that was going to help people. And I got a lot of validation in that this business really at its core is all about people and taking care of families and taking care of communities. And how important that is to the overall business model was something that both validated my decision, but also made me really proud to be part of the funeral profession.
You didn't really stay on the backside of, in just the accounting world. You kind of branched out and became kind of more of a business development person. Was that something that happened while you were at Prime Succession, or did that come later?
Actually, that came later. As time went on, I transitioned to another company, was a founder at Keystone Group, and was able to, over a period of time, move from primarily being in accounting and finance, I was the CFO there, into being more operationally oriented and helping the company evolve as we started to focus on developing new aspects of helping consumers at the time of death. And so I got more and more exposure to the operational side. And again, the pre-need side, I became more and more involved in the pre-need aspect of funeral operating companies, but also on the front line with the frontline operations. And from there, I was fortunate to help start Foundation Partners as the next evolution when Keystone was acquired. A good experience. I learned a lot from that experience about myself and about really what can be accomplished with a focus on innovation, on aggressively going after the market, and really thinking more broadly about what can be done in a short period of time, which has served me well as I've transitioned into my role here at Homesteaders.
That's a leap from going from funeral home acquisitions, three companies in a row essentially that you were doing that with, and now you're solely in the pre-need space and insurance space. What kind of precipitated that shift? What was the catalyst for moving over to Homesteaders?
Yeah, so when I looked at, I was about 50 years old when I made the decision to come to Homesteaders. So
Seasoned,
right? 9 years ago. And time goes by fast. But when I looked at what Homesteaders was all about, it resonated with everything that I was about historically, about a team that cares for each other and works really hard to accomplish what needs to get done, but also cares about their partners and wants to make sure that the work we do ultimately helps our funeral partners and our agency partners be successful at the same time. And having a company that's a mutual company that's been around 117 years now, that was really appealing to me. And I saw this model as being a great model for the funeral profession and obviously for insurance. Funny thing was, when I was younger and first starting out in my career in public accounting, my father had been in insurance, and I said I never wanted to work in insurance. So he was thrilled when I transitioned into working at Homesteaders back in insurance.
I didn't know that.
It's funny how things come around. And early on, when I became CEO, my mother and father finally pre-needed at the age of 88.
And that probably didn't help our average
age. It did not help our average age. But I was able to sign the policies, and they were very, very proud of the fact that they had a pre-need policy with my name
fridge.
On it. Yeah. So anyway, it's been an interesting kind of twist to the way my career started, not wanting to be in insurance, to full turn, come back around and see what Homesteaders does as a company. The other thing I saw in Homesteaders was a company that had scale and assets and a sole commitment to the funeral profession. So it was a place where I could take all that I had learned in operating funeral homes and be a resource to help Homesteaders be both a thought leader and be a resource to the profession. You know, we have the scale to do a lot of things that an independent funeral home might not have the ability to do, or even an agency partner might not have the scale or capital to do. And that was part of what excited me, was being able to leverage the size and scale of Homesteaders to really help the profession figure out what the future looks like and be prepared for it rather than being impacted or disrupted by it.
You know, it's really interesting to hear you talk about kind of your dad and the history of insurance, because as you know, my dad's a funeral director and also sold life insurance in a former life. And I remember thinking I would never go into funeral service, and I didn't want to have anything to do with life insurance, and here I am. It's just so funny how those things kind of
tend to come back around, right?
Yes, I'm sure my dad is also very proud, though I don't sign anyone's life insurance policy, which is a very, very good thing.
Maybe someday.
Who knows? I know a lot of the people are in the profession, have known you for a long time, have a lot of respect for you, and know that you bring with you a lot of wisdom. So I want to ask what some of those harder lessons that you've learned are. Are there any takeaways that you can share with the people listening that might benefit them?
One thing is that when you look at your career trajectory, it's really important to think about these bigger ideas of what do you want to do? What do you have passion for? What are you committed to? Even if it might mean that you're making a little less money, or it's not, you know, the most exciting career path today. But if you think about it long term, what do I want to be doing? What am I passionate about? Because we spend a lot of time working. But when I look back, the things that are most rewarding to me And the things that I most value are the times where I was working on something that had a significant impact on other people and benefited them. I worked on a lot of transactions and accomplished a lot of interesting things, exciting acquisitions, those sorts of things, but those things all fade. When you look back over your career, the things that you remember, the people you worked with, the people you helped have greater success, and the way you're impacting other people through the work that you do are the most important things. And that's one of the best parts about funeral service as a profession, is that every day you're impacting people in a very significant way.
Before you move on, I want to kind of talk about that a little bit more, because we're in a season, and I feel like we've been in this season for several years now, where we're seeing a lot of attrition in funeral service. We're seeing a lot of career burnout, compassion fatigue. And in those seasons, for funeral directors who were called to the business for that passion that you just outlined, it can be really hard for them to find that every single day in their day-to-day realities. What recommendations or advice do you have for a funeral professional who might be listening to this that is struggling to find that motivation and passion?
Stay connected to a peer network for other people who are passionate about serving families. Don't let, you know, your current circumstances grind you down to where you lose that compassion, the passion for what you do. And take care of yourself, because if you're not healthy and you're a professional who needs to be on solid ground to help folks who are going through very difficult times, as is the case when any family experiences a death, whatever the nature of it, you're not going to be as helpful to them. And so you have to invest in taking care of yourself. And I don't think we as a profession have done a great job of giving funeral professionals all the means they need to take care of themselves so that they can take care of families. And that to me, I think, is one of the things as a profession we need to work on. We're starting to do some of that, but I think there's way more to be done there to make sure we take care of our own so that they can take care of others at a very difficult time in their life.
Yeah, I really like that. I think about my dad and the harder days that he faced at the funeral home. He was the only funeral director on staff at the funeral home he was at. And when you don't have that peer network, it makes it a lot more difficult to manage on the day-to-day when there are tough calls, when there are tough families, there are tough situations you're dealing with. So I agree that that's a huge issue.
And the general populace understands on some level, but not at the level that you do if you're a funeral professional, when you have to take care of someone who's young who dies tragically, or you know, many other scenarios, you know, someone who's lost a spouse way before their time, all these things, you know, children. Mm-hmm. Those things take a toll on people emotionally, and having a peer network of people who have similar experiences can relate and can allow you to vent and just share that experience with somebody else who knows what you're talking about is really, really important, if nothing else.
Yeah, and I think also extending that to their immediate family. I remember this was early on when I started at Homesteaders. I interviewed one of our funeral home customers who had taken care of a young girl that had died in a car accident, and she was the same age as their daughter, and he called his wife at 3 o'clock in the morning and asked if she would let them use their daughter's Easter dress for this little girl's service, because what she had been wearing when the accident occurred wasn't something that she could be viewed in. And those kinds of things that even families of funeral professionals are asked to say yes to and to live with, I think there's a lot to be said for making sure that everyone in those situations is okay and taken care of and that you're checking in together.
And the other thing is, be proud of what you do. Because the work that is done as a funeral professional is so important to people. And you only know that when you're going through that experience, that it really changes how they experience the death and the loss of a loved one when they have quality support from a funeral professional who knows what needs to be done and knows the work that needs to be done and can help them through that process. Those very early stages is really critical. So be proud of it. Not everybody can do it. But you should definitely take a lot of pride in what you do and be comfortable asking to get paid for that. Every other profession is comfortable in asking to get paid for the expertise they bring to the equation. And in funeral service, we're asked to be on call 24/7 and rise to the call of the community whenever there's a need. You know, it's reasonable to be paid a reasonable amount for that and to make a reasonable profit as a funeral operation. And we need to get more comfortable with that and not be so defensive about our pricing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. There's a lot of invisible job description that goes with being a funeral professional. I mean, you're really signing on to be a community leader, and there's a lot that goes with that. You're never really off duty. You have to bring a level of professionalism and care and consistency to that role, and that's really hard work. I agree, it requires fair compensation. Are there pieces of advice or individuals who've mentored you that really stand out in your mind?
I have been fortunate to have a lot of mentors, which probably means I didn't know what the heck I was doing for a lot of this, right?
I've never interpreted that way, but now I feel self-conscious about my mentors.
So I have a lot of people I was very, very fortunate to have great mentors all along the way from my very entry into funeral service, people who had been in the business for a long time and they're still actively involved in the business. And so, I think being willing to listen and take advice and seek input from funeral professionals who have been in the business for a long time, but also being willing to say, I might have a different perspective on that and have a little confidence in saying, maybe I can do things a little differently, a little better as we go forward. I don't have to do things the way that everybody did them for the last 40 years because the consumer's changing, communities are changing, needs of the consumer are changing. And so we need a little bit of both respect for mentors, willingness to seek out information and learn, and at the same time, willingness to think differently and look at other places where communities are served by other different professions and figure out if there's a better way to do something for the future. And so it's an interesting balance of saying, okay, I'm going to take everything that the mentors provide to me. And that's one great thing about the funeral profession. People will freely share perspectives, ideas, ways to make things better. And that's a wonderful part about the funeral profession is that it's a very open sharing environment where you will have lots of people who will help you. And if you get stuck somewhere with something that's really important, please seek out other people who may have had the same experiences because they will freely share what they did right, what they did wrong, what worked, what didn't work. So that's a great way to start building an idea of how you're going to tackle problems. But also don't be afraid to think differently than others and cut a slightly new path to, serve families in the best way possible, because new ideas are something that I think we need in the profession as the consumer has different expectations for us over time.
I'm curious, from your perspective, what have been some of the highs and the lows in your time here?
As I look over my career, what were some of the highs and the lows? Some of the times that I thought my career wasn't on the path that I wanted it to be on or wasn't going in a direction that I had hoped something was going, when I started, ultimately ended up being the best thing that ever happened to me, because it forced me to make a change or it forced, something that I didn't anticipate emerged out of a path that developed because my original thought on how plan A was going to go didn't pan out the way I thought. And now I'm on to plan B or C, right? So it was a perfect chance for me to shift gears and say, look, I can finish my career here at a company that meets all of my objectives, doing great things for people, company that's going to be here for the long haul, but also a business that's quite different than what I thought I was going to be doing, but also be rewarding for me and help people on the front lines in a big way.
I think there's tremendous value when you're looking at your career and kind of the progression of it to have built-in resiliency, because you're going to have those times of failure and things going differently than you expected. I mean, just a few months before I joined Homesteaders, I was in, the final stages of interviewing for a different position, a different company that I thought was my dream job. And I went through four rounds of interviews and thought I had it in the bag and then didn't get it. And it was just devastating. But then 8 weeks later, I'm interviewing here at Homesteaders, and here we are, 9 years later. And as you know, it's been a really great decision. And so I think there's something to be said for expecting there to be unexpected in your career and being resilient through those challenges.
Same thing on innovation is having that persistence to keep moving ahead, even when things don't work out the way you think. So when you try something new, it's really easy to say, I'm going to stop that. It didn't work out the way I thought. But sometimes the most important thing is learning from what worked and what didn't work, and then continuing to push ahead. And often you can figure out, where the value is going to emerge or where the innovation is really going to have an impact. And sometimes, you still have to pull the plug at the end. But it's one of the things that I think it's too easy for people to say, I tried that, it didn't work, rather than looking at something as trying new things as a way to learn, even if that doesn't work, learn what will work, because you're working down a path to learn new things and learn new ways and figure out new solutions that are going to really make a difference for people in our business, again, for the consumer, for the family, for the communities that we serve.
I like that perspective, particularly as it relates to innovation. On our team, we have a lot of conversations about, is it working yet? And have we given it enough time to know if it's working? And the metaphor I use with my team is fruit trees. When you plant a fruit tree, it can take years for it to actually bear fruit. And you don't actually know in that time period where it's there and it's not bearing fruit if it will ever bear fruit, but you have to wait it out. And so it's kind of this watching and waiting, and there's some strategy that goes into it and just some lessons you have to learn along the way and patience to be able to give it the space and time it needs to figure out if it's going to flourish or not. I feel like learning to live with that unknown has been a really interesting lesson at Homesteaders.
It's one of the hardest things when you're a young professional starting out. And I think that's why we have attrition in funeral service, because people start out and they think it's going to go a certain way and then it doesn't go that way. Whatever they believe it's going to go like, and then they give up. When in reality, if you persist in the profession and you keep working and keep the big idea in front of you that you're going to be serving families and it's going to be rewarding in the long run if you keep at it, I think you'd have more people sticking with the business if you were able to build that resiliency. The big challenge we face is how to get good talent into the profession and make sure they stick with it so that they're there to serve families.
What do you think funeral homes, funeral professionals should be looking ahead at in 2024? What do you expect is coming down the pike? What are some of the challenges and opportunities facing us?
So I think there's a couple of trends that over the next several years, I tend to look longer than just a year at trends.
You are not doing your assignment. I'll give maybe extra credit.
I'm not, but I'll give, you an idea of the things that I think we'll start to see in the profession, some good and some challenging. I think talent will always be a challenge for the profession. So I think it's important for funeral home owners and funeral professionals to try and create a good work culture environment so that when you attract talent, they stay with your organization, because culture drives retention. I think that things like cremation will become, the shift to cremation will be less important, because we'll get to a point where it, you know, the shift doesn't happen as quickly. In most communities across the U.S., where it's kind of at a full point where people who want cremation is going to select cremation, hopefully with service, and that'll be the really big focus, is making sure we're offering to every family who selects cremation as their disposition choice the option of having a service. So I think technology is going to be a big part of our future and ways we can deliver better service for families and communities. And you're starting to see more of those things emerge. As part of where we're looking is how can we leverage technology to help expand the continuum of care. Hiring the right people, creating the right culture, and paying those individuals enough is going to be really important so that they stick with the business.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think particularly the staffing model, the people model, you're going to see a lot more need for that going into the next year.
I think there's probably another, you know, year or two of inflation pressure on the business, but then it should settle down, maybe a little sooner than that, but you know, that's maybe a little too optimistic. On the counter side, you know, interest rates being higher from a pre-need standpoint, it allows companies like ours to start increasing growth rates, which should take a little bit of the pressure off, at least on the pre-need side. So you'll see that from us and our other companies that do the same thing that we do. We should start having enhanced growth rates just because of the work we've done on investments and the fact that rates are higher as the portfolio kind of turns to higher rate, higher return investments. So that's a good thing. Succession planning in funeral service is going to be a really big challenge and opportunity. So that's the other thing I've learned throughout my career, is when change happens and when there's a challenge, typically it creates opportunity for people who are creative and willing to take a little bit of risk and figure out how to solve those challenges or solve the problems. Those are the folks who thrive in those environments. And I would say historically, that hasn't been as necessary in funeral service as it probably will be over the next 5 to 10 years, because there's going to be a lot more transition of ownership. And there's going to be, you know, some of these other challenges with consumers looking for different value offerings from funeral professionals to supplement the core delivery of funeral service.
Yeah. And I think with that, you know, partners and vendors that can provide services and support for those types of succession needs. Like I think about our funeral home lending program and things like that, that provide a solution to a problem that's very real for funeral providers who want to invest in their business and potentially expand their business, but don't have the capital today to do that.
Or people who, young professionals who want to buy into a business but don't have the capital to do that. It's why we got into funeral home lending, is so that we could support our funeral home partners in their succession planning and, and transitioning the business to other private owners. So, that's exciting to me. We've had a really good, we just started a year ago and it's really taken off, and we're really excited to see how much need there has been in the marketplace for that kind of a solution.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I appreciate all of your time today, Steve. I have two more questions, but they're easier questions for you. And we're going to ask these of all of our podcast guests. So you'll be our first guinea pig, but then everyone who comes after you will have to do the same thing. The first question is just kind of, what are you reading right now? What kind of books are influencing you?
I try to at least read a couple books every quarter. The one that has impacted me the most recently is written by three senior partners from McKinsey. And it's about CEO excellence. But what I found, and I shared it with our whole team here, is that it's not just about CEO. It's really about leadership excellence and how, in a dynamic environment, the world we're working in right now, you have to think differently than you may have had to in the past as a leader. So everybody, or most people, lead in some way, whether you're leading from inside the organization, deeper in the organization, or you're the owner or the CEO. But what I liked about it, it was a really well-balanced perspective of six key attributes that represent excellence in leadership for any organization.
I really like your perspective on that. The last question I have for you is a pretty easy one. I want to know, what is giving you energy right now? And this could be anything. It could be something at work. It could be something in your personal life. What is energizing you?
The innovation efforts we've been making over the past several years are starting to bear fruit, which is exciting for me. It excites me on the funeral home lending side that we have so many partners who are interested in working with us to provide capital so they can become operators themselves, where otherwise they wouldn't be able to grow because they were capital constrained. And so that's exciting to me, to be able to help them to grow. And in the same turn, we're getting a good return, but also we're growing as part of that. So that's exciting to me.
I was half expecting you to tell me that what's energizing you is Gold Peak iced tea. And I had grand visions of like the Home Centers podcast brought to you by Gold Peak. But that, alas, we'll have to live for another day. But thank you so much for your time, Steve. This has been really a delightful conversation. I hope that those of you who are listening have also been enjoying it as much as I have. Is there anything else that you want to share? Any final parting thoughts?
It's just an honor to have spent most of my working life, working in and around a business that takes such good care of their customers and their communities and really does good things for people. And it's an honor to be able to sit in this seat at Homesteaders, where nine CEOs have sat before, to make sure that, we're ready for the next 100 years before I out and hand this off to somebody else. It's an honor just to have that opportunity and to do something where you're really helping people, but you're also rewarded and feel excited about coming to work every day to make a difference.
Great. Well, thank you, Steve. I really appreciate your time.